40 Olympic greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The countdown continues for the Rio Olympics in Brazil. We're now 38 days away to the opening ceremony at the Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. New technology will be used at the stadium and at other Olympic venues, as we hear now from our friend in Rio, Luis Piazzet. Sporty Olympic greetings, Luis.
Sporty Olympic greetings, Sonny. Speed and performance in the Olympics 2016 will be an attraction not only protagonized by athletes. To facilitate the referees' jobs and audiences' entertainment, technology will play a key role. In every previous chapters of the Games, new technologies had been introduced, but in Rio it will be a true showcase of technological innovations never used before in the Olympics. Teams of volleyball, indoor and beach, for the first time, we use video reviews to challenge a referee's call to verify any challenged points. Replays will be shown on the big screen in the arena. Swimming, digital lap counters placed at the bottom of each lane of the pool near the turning point will automatically update the lap count when a swimmer hits the touchpad on the wall. Canoe, sprint, and rowing, we use GPS technology attached to each vessel, and it will help fans follow the canoe sprint and rowing events with more details than ever before and in real time on big screens. Replacing a need of a referee, archery and shooting, we use an electronic scoring system with a precision of less than half a millimeter. Weightlifting athletes will have their full movements captured by high-definition cameras. To add to the tension, spectators in Rio will also be able to monitor athletes' heartbeat rates in real time. Even outside sports, during the Games, wearables will be a Whoop, an innovative bracelet that visitors to Rio will use like a contactless payment card to pay for goods and services. Athletes, for instance, will have a payment ring backed by a credit card account. Now, while the speed and performance outside the sport itself have no limit and restrictions for innovations, the WADA, International Anti-Doping Institution, stole the headlines this weekend past and announced that, I quote, due to non-conformity with the international standard for laboratories, it is suspended the accreditation of the Brazilian Doping Control Laboratory. It adds another episode of high expectancy in regarding the success of the Rio 2016. Yet, about the speed, the Velodrome, that is the track cycling venue, was finally declared finished and officially handed to the organizers for a test event this week, after a series of problems during its construction, including 3 times cancellation of contractors. One of the reasons for such a delay was the arrival of the wood for its floor, treated in Holland, a fancy Russian pinus from Siberia. This week past also was released by the organizers in conjunction with the Brazilian Navy and other related institutions, the excluded areas of the Guanabara Bay during the Games. Since there will be 3 areas of competition on the water mirror, it will be prohibited the traffic of private leisure watercrafts. The owners with boats in yacht clubs and in the marina will have their vessels locked down. The commercial vessels, including supply and cargo ships, and the ferry will have restrictions during competitions and rearrangement of schedule. I am Luis Piazet for the Sunny Side of Sports in Rio de Janeiro.
Thanks, Luis. We heard Luis report how the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, has suspended the credentials of a testing laboratory in Rio de Janeiro. Rio 2016 spokesman Mario Andrada, reacting to the suspension, had this to say.
Our commitment with the clean games remains the same. We will have clean games. There is zero tolerance against doping. We're just waiting the WADA instructions on how should we proceed with the testing for the Rio 2016 games. We all know that the lab that has been suspended is a federal institution, and that WADA has the right to decide how the testing should be done. So we are waiting for their instructions, bearing in mind that there is no compromise with testing and that the Rio 2016 will be clean games.
Meanwhile, we also heard Luis Piazet report on the new Olympic velodrome in Rio. One of the first athletes to try out the track was Swiss cyclist Gael Suter.
The venue is working well, and it's already in good condition to ride, and I think some great times will be done at the Olympics.
Joining us now with more Olympic news is VOA Sports reporter Ben Cento. Sporty Olympic greetings, Ben.
Sporty Olympic greetings, Sonny. Olympic sailors are hoping there won't be stormy weather during the Rio Games, but you might say there's a perfect storm in terms of severe weather pollution, severe water pollution in Rio de Janeiro's Guanabara Bay. Guanabara Bay is set to be the site of many water sport events such as sailing, kayaking, and rowing. Rio has a very loose system of collecting trash, and many residents resort to dropping their trash out of the window or onto the street, which is then washed by the wind and the rain into the water. Members of the German sailing team recalled during their practice drills of seeing plastic bags, shoes, chairs, dead animals, and even human remains. However, this may not be the most worrisome pollution in the river. Another sailor had to have emergency surgery when small cuts on his legs became horribly infected by bacteria and water that got stuck between his leg and his wetsuit, developing severe blisters as well as deep open wounds. At first look, the view of the Guanabara Bay and the iconic Rio skyline of towering mountains is unparalleled. But look a little longer and you can find long trails of raw sewage and garbage flowing through the areas where the Olympic teams are training before the games begin. Brazilian authorities, however, have insisted the bay is safe for the athletes. I'm VOA's Ben Cento. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Ben. Still more Olympic news. The world's top-ranked golfer, Jason Day, withdrew from the Rio Games on Tuesday, citing fears over the Zika virus. In a statement posted on Twitter, the 28-year-old Australian star said, and I quote, "The reason for my decision is my concerns about the possible transmission of the Zika virus and the potential risks that it may present to my wife's future pregnancies and to future members of our family." While it has always been a major goal to compete in the Olympics on behalf of my country, playing golf cannot take precedent over the safety of our family. I will not place them at risk. Golf is returning to the Olympics for the first time since 1904, but a number of the sport's biggest stars, including world number four Rory McIlroy of Northern Ireland, have pulled out due to Zika concerns. Joining us now with an update on the European Football Championship is VOA Sports reporter Jonah Haskell. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The quarterfinal field is set in France after the last two quarterfinal matches on Monday, and one of those results was a real shocker. Iceland, playing in their first ever major tournament, took on powerhouse England and fell behind early after Wayne Rooney scored a penalty in the first 10 minutes. But the Icemen came right back when Ragnar Sigurdsson scored to tie it just a couple minutes later. And Iceland then shocked the world when Kolbeinn Sigþórsson scored from outside the 18-yard box to put the tiny nation up 2-1. England could not recover and were eliminated when the final whistle blew, while Iceland move on to the quarterfinals. Icelandic coaches Heimar Hallgrímsson and Lars Lagerbäck were thrilled by their team's performance.
This was probably our best game. Both defensively, we didn't have so much problem defending the English. And also in ball possession, we created a lot of good chances. I think this was our best game yet. But I'm still going to say it once more. I think we've still haven't shown what we can do. So hopefully our best game is yet to come.
We created goal-scoring chances, I think, so we deserve the win. For me, football is about winning. For me, football is about not letting in goals and scoring as many goal-scoring chances as possible and score goals. And I think this team has really shown what they can do. I mean, the players are absolutely great.
The Icelandic team really will have to be great in their quarterfinal matchup as they will be facing the hosts, France. In the other round of 16 game, Italy defeated defending European champion Spain 2-0 as they got goals from Giorgio Chiellini and Graziano Pelle. Italy has impressed after coming into the tournament with low expectations and will be thrilled to reach the quarterfinals, where they will come up against another tough challenge in world champion Germany. They will play that game in Bordeaux. The other quarterfinal games will feature Wales against Belgium in Lille and Poland versus Portugal in Marseille, as well as the aforementioned Iceland-France game. The quarterfinal round begins on Thursday with the Portugal-Poland matchup, and the final will be on July 10th in Paris. I'm VOA's Jonah Haskell. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Jonah. Here in Washington, President Obama has honored the Women's National Basketball Association champion, Minnesota Lynx. VOA sports reporter Toddy Abeje joins us now with details. Sporty greetings, Toddy.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Monday, the Minnesota Lynx have made their third trip to the White House to meet with President Barack Obama in team history. It is a tradition for college and pro sports teams when they win a championship for a season, they go to the White House to see the president. The Lynx have won their third championship last season by defeating the Indiana Fever. They had previously visited the White House in 2012 and in 2014. The Lynx are 13-2 this season after winning a WNBA record 13 straight games to start the season. Obama congratulated the Lynx on their championship and said they are a great role model for young women in sports.
I also want to thank this team, as I always tell them, for being great examples for my daughters and for girls across the country. We know that when young women are involved in sports, they do better across the board.
The star players of the Lynx, Maya Moore, who was the finals MVP, Simone Augustus, and Lindsey Whalen, were honored on the WNBA's top 20 list for being some of the most influential and successful players in the league's history. The trio have played a part in all three of the franchise's championships, making the White House trip each time. Moore talked about how special her team is in building a winning culture.
And as the rookies got to see, we're really a family. And what you see behind me right now is very genuine, how we treat each other, the passion that we play with. And that's really the heart of our team and the heart of this club. We care. And it shows when we're on the court, when we're together.
Ask Maya Moore, who visited the White House when she played at the University of Connecticut and won two championships. Meanwhile, let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the late, great Hall of Fame basketball head coach, Bat Summitt, who passed away today at the age of 64 after her five-year battle with early-onset Alzheimer's disease. She coached the University of Tennessee for 38 seasons and winning a college basketball record 1,098 and was considered one of the great coaches, male or female, in basketball history. I'm VOA's Toddy Abeje. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Toddy. Toddy, Pat Summitt, definitely deserving of a sunny side of sports salute. She's probably, may she rest in peace, but I'm guessing she probably visited the White House a few times.
Yes, she did. She visited the White House when George W. Bush, our previous president, was our president. So when they won the championships in 2007 and 2008.
We heard President Obama crediting the Minnesota Lynx for being role models for his two daughters. And I think Pat Summitt has to be considered a role model for young women in sports.
She is, because she was successful on the court, but off the court. All of her players, did you know a fun fact? All of her players that played for her graduated from college and got a degree.
Wow, that's very impressive. So she was really an educator,
too. She was also an educator, and the men's players should take a lesson from her. Get your education.
Get your education, because at Kentucky, at least with the men's team, it tends to be
one and done. Yes.
Well, our friend Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter, he'll be in shortly, and I think he is going to talk about Pat Summitt, the great basketball coach who died on Tuesday. But let's get back to Maya Moore, Toddy. Maya, one of the great professional women's basketball players out there. And I think there must be a little sorrow from her over the passing of Pat Summitt.
Yes, there is some sorrow because she played at the University of Connecticut and her school and the coach and Pat Summitt's school, University of Tennessee, are both successful college basketball programs on the women's side. So, yeah, it's a very tough loss. She's considered arguably the greatest coach in women's college basketball history.
Greatest coach and another great coach for the University of Connecticut, Gino Auriemma, who coached Maya Moore. And I'm sure he's also going to be having some tributes for the late, great Pat Summitt. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. We've been talking about Pat Summitt, the late, great female basketball coach for the University of Tennessee. I'm guessing she might be trending today in the sports world?
Absolutely. I mean, just you look at the tributes pouring in, really transcends anything that, you know, has been described of her. Transcends sport. It's not just basketball players, not just women basketball players. It's all sports, athletes from all across. Transcends gender. You're seeing a lot of male athletes saying she was a huge inspiration to them. And it even transcends sports as a, you know, a category. President Obama calling her a patriot, saying when he gave her the Congressional Medal of Freedom, it was a very proud day as a sports fan, but as an American. A lot of people noting that Pat Summitt led the women's basketball team to Olympic gold in the 80s as their coach. And she actually won Olympic medals as a player as well. But you're seeing these terms, inspirational, champion, legendary, all fitting for this amazing person who is unfortunately and sadly taken from us too soon.
We had some audio earlier in the show, Andrew, from President Obama. He was honoring the Minnesota Lynx, the Women's National Basketball Association champions. And he was crediting them with being role models for his two daughters. And as I said to Toddy, I think Pat Summitt has to also be considered a role model for female athletes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, as much as she's transcended all of these kind of labels and boundaries, what she did for women's basketball on the collegiate level and women's sports generally can't be overlooked. And in fact, isn't being overlooked on social media. One of the things that I keep seeing over and over is kind of the pedigree or the, you know, the coaching tree and the player tree coming from Pat Summitt, the amount of Olympians, female, you know, WNBA players, female sport coaches, executives in the sports world. It just, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens, all of these names, and those tributes are pouring in from them. But just saying how this one person could be such a role model and leave such a legacy. Legacy is another word that we keep seeing again and again on social media, that even though she's gone, she's going to live on through all of the people that she mentored, through the University of Tennessee, certainly. The court there is named after her. It's the Summitt. It's just the Summitt. Not the Summitt Court, not the Pat Summitt, just the Summitt.
Great name.
It is. So, she's, you know, like I said, very sorely missed on social media. But a lot of people remembering such great moments and how much of an impact she had. I loved one quote that I saw the New York Times tweeted out. When Tennessee officials asked her if she would consider coaching the men's team, she said, "Why would that be considered a step up?" So she had a very fun sense of humor. A lot of people saying that, you know, the picture that they most often see shared is her, that kind of icy stare that she would give. But she had such a great sense of humor. People are saying that to know her, she was so warm. And that, I think, is the, kind of that sense of humor. So why would it be a step up if I want to leave the women's team and go coach the men? So, you know, lots of great memories.
If you're just tuning into the sunny side of sports, we're paying tribute to the late, great Hall of Fame basketball coach Pat Summitt, who died on Tuesday at the age of 64 from early onset Alzheimer's disease. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a nice Washington Post article on Aries Merritt. He is the reigning world champion in the hurdles from the United States. He'll be competing at the U.S. Olympic track and field trials this coming weekend. And he's on the comeback trail. The article points out how Aries will be hurdling with his sister's kidney. That's right, he had transplant surgery last September. His sister gave her, gave him one of her kidneys. And so Aries is definitely a great inspirational story. And I'm hoping he makes the Olympic team, Andrew. Just a great story with a kidney from his sister.
Yeah, well, on that note of inspirational stories, there's an inspirational story coming out of Wimbledon that has kind of captured social media attention. It's this gentleman, Marcus Willis. He's a tennis player, and he was about a week away from, I guess, hanging up his tennis shoes, hanging up his racket, and saying, I'm going to be done. He was going to go to the U.S. and coach tennis there. He's originally from the U.K. And in kind of a plot from a movie, he met a woman, and she said, don't go to the U.S. You just met me. I want you to stay here. I think, you know, we're going to be in love. And long story short, he said, okay, I'll stick with it. Well, he went through the qualifying at Wimbledon, won six matches to qualify, won his first round match, and then he plays Roger Federer tomorrow in the match of his life, center court Wimbledon. He said, this is my dream. I've always wanted to go here and play at Wimbledon. Never thought I'd have the chance, and so this is my dream come true. So lots of social media attention for him. He's the people's champion, ranked currently 772nd in the world. So against number three, Roger Federer, probably not a great shot for him, which he admits, actually. He said, you know, I'm probably not going to win this match, but I'm just glad to be out there and just have the opportunity. But what a great feel-good story coming out of Wimbledon, and one that social media has really embraced, that this guy, you know, literally a week away from moving to the U.S., a week away from giving up his tennis career, and he said, you know what, I'm going to stick with it. And look where it got him. It got him on center court at Wimbledon tomorrow.
Andrew, we gave Pat Summitt a Sunny Side of Sports salute. I'm going to give Marcus Willis a Sunny Side of Sports salute, too. And Roger Federer, can you imagine being across the net from Roger Federer?
Yeah, and Marcus Willis is 25 years old, so I'm sure that, you know, Roger Federer has been one of his idols as he's grown up and progressed in his tennis career. So not only to get to center court at Wimbledon and play, but to play one of your idols is pretty remarkable. So good on him, and hopefully, you know, he does well tomorrow. I don't know, like I said, that he'll beat Roger, but maybe he can take a couple games off him, or maybe even a set. Who knows?
Andrew, when it comes to tennis idols, Serena Williams wins her opening match at Wimbledon.
Yes, just like the men with the first match the other day on center court was the defending men's champion, Novak Djokovic. The defending women's champion, Serena Williams, kicks off her defense of her Wimbledon title. So we'll see if that can happen. High hopes for her that she can, if she wins the Wimbledon title, we'll get to number 22. She'll tie Steffi Graf as the most all-time in the open era among men or women. And then if she can win at the U.S. Open, she'll get 23. She actually beat Steffi's record.
Well, what's your sense, Andrew? Do you think Serena can equal Steffi at Wimbledon this year?
I think so. I think, you know, they always say that Serena Williams' biggest competitor is Serena Williams. So it's kind of a mental thing. There's a lot of what we hear about Andy Murray, too. He's, of course, the Brit who's looking to win again at Wimbledon. He's the first British man to win in 70-some-odd years a few years ago when he won. So I think that if she keeps, you know, her head in a good space and doesn't get stressed and doesn't put too much pressure on herself, I think anything's possible for her. I think she can keep playing for years to come.
Possibly a rematch against the Spanish woman who beat her in Paris?
I think that's certainly possible. Actually, that was the final last year at Wimbledon when she played Garbiñe Muguruza in the final at Wimbledon. So it could be a rematch of last year and a rematch of the French Open. We'll see.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, less happy news for England. They're, of course, gotten beaten by Iceland in a huge upset in the Euro, got eliminated by Iceland. So the things that I'm seeing on social media that I'll point out very quickly, there is a news anchor in Iceland or a sportscaster who just goes bananas is the only word I can think of, just absolutely crazy. You listen to the audio, it sounds like he's either being attacked or he's just, you know, with joy, just freaking out. And then the jokes, many of them at against Brexit, talking about the Brexit. A lot of European Union states and European Union soccer fans making fun of England in light of the Brexit and saying, well, guess what? I mean, that's why your soccer team lost. Maybe if you'd picked to stay in the EU, maybe you wouldn't have lost. So a little bit of geopolitics in there.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the June 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Today, about 60 million people around the world are internally displaced or living as refugees. Some left their homes to escape violence. Some fled famine, catastrophic flooding, or other natural disaster. It is the worst humanitarian crisis since the end of the Second World War, and half of the displaced are children under the age of 18. Crises that cause civilian populations to abandon their homes are doubly harmful to children because they disrupt some of the most protective and supportive environments in which children can live and learn. Add to this fact that too often, humanitarian response has not prioritized ensuring that displaced children can continue their formal education, and we may find that the future of an entire generation of children has been compromised. As crises have become longer, families are displaced for 20 years on average, children may spend their entire childhood exiled from their homes without education. A new generation grows up without the basic skills needed to contribute to their community and society, wrote U.S. Agency for International Development Director of Education Evelyn Rodriguez-Perez in a recent blog post. Today, around 75 million children between the ages of 3 and 18 in 35 countries are in urgent need of educational support. That is why the U.S. government is launching new initiatives to help youth in conflict areas continue their education. Today, the U.S. Department of State, in partnership with the leading virtual education provider, will begin a new initiative, Coursera for Refugees, to help refugees quickly build career skills and find employment through access to the 1,000-plus Coursera courses offered online. U.S. embassies and consulates will partner with local nonprofits to facilitate these courses in person. UNICEF launched the Education Cannot Wait Fund on May 23rd, which aims to help children continue their education in emergency situations. The goal is to build sustainable schools that will transition from crisis response to longer-term development of education systems. The fund hopes to elicit multi-year commitments from international donors, both public and private. There is an urgent need to ensure that kids who are forced into refuge are not denied an education. Education Cannot Wait has the potential to chart the path forward by developing the tools we need to deliver education, said U.S. Agency for International Development Administrator Gail Smith. The United States has committed to an initial donation of $20 million for Education Cannot Wait. We urge all our friends and partners around the world to join us and invest in the future of those children who are in greatest need.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year-old prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Thank you.